Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to a special edition of the Warriors Plus Minus Warriors All 82 podcast, really draft podcast we're calling it. I called on our expert Sam Vecini way out in Australia. Thank you for coming on, number one. Number two, personally, I've watched like an absurd amount of tape this week because I'm playing catch up, right? That's what people do. You, I'm sure, have been watching tape all year. Are you watching tape now? Are you still trying to learn tendencies of these prospects, or do you pretty much know everything at this point? You're just like gathering into like, what's this month like for you?
So yeah, it's definitely hit or miss. I would say that I do watch a lot of tape because I am running through the final evaluations for the draft guide right now that will come out sometime like two and a half weeks before the NBA draft. So, you know, right around July 10th is what we're hoping for. I don't know if it'll be that day. Don't quote me on any of that. Having said that, part of that process does involve running back through tape, really diving deep on these dudes and really making sure that, for instance, with Texas, right? So someone like Kai Jones, I'm sure we're going to talk about. Texas had a lot of different players in the front court this year. They had Kai Jones, they had Greg Brown, they had Jericho Sims. And throughout the year, because Kai had burst onto the scene so quickly, and because Greg Brown was this high level, you know, top 10 recruit, five-star prospect, everyone expected him to be a one and done. I expected those guys to be better than Jericho Sims. But then you go back and you watch the tape and you understand that Jericho Sims is actually their most effective big man this year. And he has a game that translates to the NBA. So you go back, you watch, you know, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago, I went back. So after Texas's season had ended and all that stuff, we're talking in May at this point, I went back and I watched probably 7 or 8 Texas games, 6, 7. I don't remember the exact number, plus a ton of clips on Sims specifically, where I didn't watch anyone else but Sims in the way that he would interact with his teammates on the court, and just tried to gather like, okay, why is this guy not a prospect? And what I came to find was, yeah, I have him like at 50 on my board now because I was just missing the forest for the trees in many respects, right? Not paying attention to the guy that was actually good as opposed to the guys that we think might be good at some point. So there's definitely some tape that we're watching this time of year, but I mean, I'll be honest, from I would say late April through now and through July 29th, 28th, whenever the NBA draft is, dates are all wonky here in Australia.
28th for us, 29th for you, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say. A lot of my mornings are spent on the phone. I would say I'm on the phone from, you know, typically I'm up by 7 o'clock. You caught me a little bit sleeping in today because my wife and I just moved in to our new house here. So we've been pretty wiped this week, but from basically 7 a.m. until 12 p.m. typically I'm on the phone for a pretty substantial amount of that time.
Okay, so let's dive into the Warriors. Obviously, this is a Warriors-specific podcast, and they're really a swing team in the draft. I'm sure if you were kind of like ranking the teams whose situations interest you most, I'm sure they're, yeah, you know, top three, top five, really. And not only, obviously, from a trade perspective, which we don't need to dive into that. The phone lines are open. You know, I think everyone's kind of reported that, but that's clear. I think they're a little less desperate to trade these picks than maybe the league thinks they are, you know, I'm not sure the market, we'll see how it materializes, but for this podcast I want to go to it under the assumption they're using 7, they're using 14. And that's such a range. It's interesting because, like, if you just had 7, you might be looking at like 10 to 12 guys. But if you have 7 and 14, I mean, you're looking at, you know, even up to Scotty Barnes, Kuminga, who I want to talk about in a second. Like, what if one of those two falls, all the way up to guys on your board that are probably 20, 21, 22. So it's a really wide range, obviously.
Yep.
Let's kind of start up top. I mean, I think it's guaranteed. Cunningham's gone, Mobley's gone, Green's gone. Suggs, yep. No, zero way he falls to 7, right?
Yes, is what I would say. I would maybe 2%. Very low. Exceptionally low. I've
higher
just heard
percent
enough,
than they had to win the lottery, though, you know, 2%.
Right. So, like, what I would say is, you know, I've heard some rumblings that Toronto, at the very least, is going to look at Scotty Barnes, which could drop one of those top four out of the top four. And then at number 5, Orlando's, you know, a bit of a wild card. They like length, athleticism, which to me says guys like Scotty Barnes and Jonathan Kuminga. I think they'd be, am I allowed to like curse on this podcast?
Yes, please. Athletic, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Orlando would be fucking crazy if they passed on Jalen Suggs if he fell to 5. So look, from a logical perspective, no, I don't think Jalen Suggs should fall to 7. But like, is there a world where Orlando is like fully in asset accumulation mode, goes, hey, we like Scotty Barnes, we like Kuminga, you know, we feel really good about someone like, you know, Davion Mitchell or someone like that at 7. Let's slide back. Let's do 5 for 7 and 14 or something like that. Like, you know, there are a lot of different permutations. Like if I was Golden State, I would be doing some level of due diligence on Suggs, Green, and Mobley. I wouldn't waste a lot of my time with it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you where their path to a guy like Suggs is those teams in that range aren't in love with him enough that they'll say, give us 14 and we'll jump to 7, more than like Everyone passes on him and then you just sit there at 7 and get him. The other two, I kind of wrote about it this week, but if let's assume those 4 that we mentioned are gone and Sam Presti's sitting there at 6. I covered Sam tight to the vest, as you know, not necessarily stuck to the consensus at times. I mean, even back to the Westbrook pick, I mean, that was kind of considered a stretch. I think there's a possibility maybe he does something wild. Sengun, I mean, Book Knight's stock is obviously rising. Like, it's not out of the question that one of those two or somebody else that we're not even talking about jumps up. Then that would bump maybe Barnes. And I think, you know, for outside looking in, looks like Kuminga maybe would be the most likely of those top 6 to stumble all the way to 7. And I think if Kuminga's sitting there at 7, that is such a tough decision for the Warriors because high ceiling, biggest, project, I would say, among those where, you know, you have him and Wiseman on the team. You might just want to send them to Santa Cruz and be like, play 35 minutes and pick and rolls, all that. But at the same time, then you're talking about 2 roster spots on massive projects with massive upside. To me, that's just become such a big tug of war if Kuminga's there. I guess I would just ask.
Well, you know, you bring up 2 massive projects with massive upside, but guys that'd be playing in Santa Cruz. I mean, with how their luxury tax bill, you know, could play out this year, depending on the moves that they make around this roster. I mean, that could be $20 million sitting in Santa Cruz. And that's not something that I think
times
front 4 is necessarily
million,
interested
right?
in.
Luxury. Right. Man, but they would have a great team down there. no. So, I mean, well, what are your thoughts on I'll ask you Barnes and Kuminga, because I think either of those two theoretically could fall to 7. I think Barnes would be a no-brainer. I mean, just watching what he can do defensively. I know, like, there is kind of it's the same conversation you would have with, like, Ben Simmons and Draymond on the court together. It's like they kind of do the same things. They're super versatile. They would just – your defense – you might have the number one defense in the league, but they're playing hot potato while, like, 4 guys are over there guarding Steph, essentially. Would you draft Barnes, no question, if he's sitting there at 7? And would you draft Kuminga, no question, if he's sitting there at 7?
I mean, look, I don't really see a circumstance where both of them are on the board. Like, if one of them is still there, it's in all likelihood because the other one is gone, in all likelihood, right?
Yeah.
So, Yes, I would draft one of those two. They've been 5 and 6 on my board for, you know, months upon months now. I've been an enormous Scotty Barnes fan the entire season. I've been an enormous Scotty Barnes fan since he was at university school playing with Vernon Carey, let alone when he went to Montverde and played with Cade and, you know, Moses Moody and De'Ron Sharp and all those guys. The thing that I think NBA evaluators love about Scotty Barnes is that he's just like such a high character kid, elite level work ethic, just an awesome, like, energy giving player to be around on the court. And plus, like you said, just an incredible defender, you know, a guy that can legitimately switch 1 through 5, although I think he would struggle a little bit more with ones early in his career than what some other people would lead you to believe. And the reason for that is because he plays very stiff and upright. He is a very explosive athlete that doesn't always access that athleticism within games. Like, there are times where he'll use that like enormous, like, condor 7'3", you know, 7'3½ wingspan, whatever it is, and get like deflections and then go to bend down and like pick up the ball. And he'll look like me or you bending down to pick up a ball, just in terms of like his lack of flexibility through his hips. And I think that you see that self, you see that bear itself out also on the offensive end, because yeah, there's been a lot of talk about how he's a point guard and, you know, he can create plays, and he does have that mind and that unselfishness and that vision to make high level passes. He is an excellent, excellent passer. The problem is that he has no threat of scoring right now. Like, any NBA, you know, defensive player from 6'5", 200 pounds, up to 7 foot, as long as you have some level of lateral quickness, is going to be able to stop him in terms of shutting down his offense. And as we know, whenever you can't get your own bucket in the NBA, you basically just have to play hot potato with the ball. You have to move it as quickly as possible, and then you end up playing 4-on-5 on offense. So while I am a little bit more bullish long-term on Scotty Barnes, I think some of the comments I've seen from people discussing how much upside he has on offense, how he can be a 6'9" point guard, I just don't think that bears itself out on tape at all. And I don't think it's really ever borne itself out on tape.
Yeah, no. And you know, the shooting, what, he barely takes three.
Yeah, he can't shoot. Like, yeah, right now he cannot shoot. And that's why I have Kuminga higher than him at this point. I understand there are like some concerns with Kuminga just in terms of his approach. He takes a very casual approach on defense. You know, I've been told from some people who've been in the gym with him that, you know, sometimes the approach isn't always there with him. There are times where he'll come in and just blow the doors off the place, work his ass off, and look unbelievable. And then there are times where he will, you know, just kind of float around and do his own thing when he's working out. So you look at the upside he has as a shot creator, though, I think it just drastically exceeds anything that we've seen at any level from Scotty Barnes at the end of the day. And that's just such a higher level upside play.
Yeah. In an environment last season that was more easily translatable. I mean, regardless of, you know, his bubble struggles efficiency wise, I mean, Kuminga's under 40% shooting. I think he was like 20 something from three on like a decently high volume. So, but then, you know, I rewatched it was the first bubble game. It was Santa Cruz against the Ignite. You know, Jordan Poole's on the floor, Nico Mannion. I mean, this is like kind of pretty good studying for somebody who covers the Warriors. Basically, totally. People he'd face in training camp. And Kuminga was probably he looked like the best prospect on the floor. He might not have been I think Jarrett Jack was actually the best player in the game. Yeah. But, you know, Kuminga was like, he went right through Poole a couple times for a layup. He came over weak side, swatted Poole. Axel Toupon, who actually got a contract with the Bucks, he had like a really good bubble.
Yep.
He bodied him up for a layup. I mean, it was like G League version of like Paul George looking stuff. And I believe coming out of that game, because that was the first time we'd all seen the Ignite, I think that day I can remember people being like, could he overtake Cade Cunningham? Obviously, what has happened since, he's tumbled down. But yeah, you see potential.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I had a sports book reach out to me and say, like, look, if you were doing odds on, you know, who you would say is most likely to be the number one pick, like, how would you set the odds? Right. And I said something like, Cade has to be like way lower. He's just the overwhelming favorite. And this was back in December before the G League bubble. Right. I said that I thought Kuminga at that point was the second most likely guy to pass Cade. Now that didn't bear itself out on the court. He showed a total lack of commitment to defense. He just made 25% of his threes. Like, I think he's a little bit better of a shooter than that. He's not a consistent shooter yet, but I think the 25% number or whatever is not as bad.
It looks better than the results for sure.
Yeah. Like, mechanically it's not broken. Like, I think that it's going to be able to work itself out as long as he continues to show some level of touch, which is there. I think it's there, to be honest. But in his case, it just didn't bear itself out like that. He wasn't quite as good as Jalen Green. Jalen Green got better throughout the course of the G League bubble. You could see the way that the game slowed down for him. You could see the way that he learned from game one to game, 14. And then to the playoff game that he played where he had like 35 points. You could see the way that he was able to operate with more patience, with more poise on the court. And to me, that's a lot more, that says a lot about the way a guy is going to adjust to the way that NBA defenses are going to play you, right? That's a lot more translatable tape, given the fact that we need, at the next level, guys who are going to keep getting better. Like, none of these guys who are 18, 19 years old, it's why the Warriors are obviously looking to move this pick if they can get anything resembling commensurate value for it. It's just hard for 19-year-olds to come in and contribute to a title contender because they aren't good enough yet. So that's why you need guys who are going to improve and continue on that upward trajectory.
So let's run. Now let's say it's the most likely scenario. The top six that are currently projected are the top six that go. The Warriors are sitting there at seven, and it's really kind of where the draft opens up, right? I mean, like, we could,
yeah,
there's probably nine different guys that theoretically could go at seven. You currently on your latest mock have James Bouknight, who kind of appears to be the biggest riser right now in the draft world. Scoring guard out of UConn. I guess I'll just start, like, why do you have him currently at seven?
So yeah, it's interesting because everyone is talking about him as a riser. I've had him in the top 10 for a while. And in large part, that's not just because of what I see on tape. Although it is like a large portion of that, but NBA teams that you talk to have been really high on James Bouknight this whole way. Like, this is not a new, like, phenomenon for NBA teams. He's a terrific scoring guard off the bounce. Like, I think he's going to be a three-level scorer, but more than anything, like, the guys who succeed at the NBA level are the guys that can string together four or five counters off the bounce as scoring guards, right? Like, you need to be able to go between the legs into an inside out dribble, into a right to left crossover, into a Euro step finish, right? And I think that he's one of the few guys that can actually string together multiple counter moves in a row, to where he's going to be an effective isolation scorer when he gets put on an island in the NBA. On top of that, the reason that I like him particularly for Golden State is that he really puts high level pressure on the rim. That is something that I think Golden State missed quite a bit this year. I'm assuming it's something that they're not necessarily going to get back when Klay Thompson starts taking up 30 minutes a game. 25 minutes a game.
Yeah,
say.
that That issue is why Jordan Poole popped so much late in the season, where it was like, right. it's not like Jordan Poole is like absolutely explosive to the rim, but he gets there. He's, you know, kind of, he has a little book night to his game, to be honest. And
a little bit,
When he got back from the bubble and like had that confidence level going and found himself late in the season, it was like, wow, this is a dimension the Warriors didn't have. What's interesting is, does his emergence make them less interested in like a scoring type guard? And to me, the biggest need on the roster is at the wing. I mean, but what you're saying is right, where it's like more than maybe positional need, it's like style of player need and scoring boost. It doesn't always have to just be, you know, Corey Kispert spreading the floor. It can be guys going downhill. You know, obviously to me, Book Knight makes a lot of sense from, you're at seven. You just want the guy who 3 years from now will be the best guy who is available to you at seven. He becomes a 22 point per game scorer. But I think he's the type of guy who's going to come in and like to grow, is going to need a bunch of shots, will be inefficient early on. Right. I mean, he's 31% from three in college. Assist to turnover ratio is not good. I think 92 turnovers, 63 assists in college.
That's the big one for me. Yeah. Like, I think the shooting's going to be fine. I think the turnovers and the passing stuff is something that would, if he went to Golden State, would particularly bother Kerr early on.
Yeah, especially because Steve Kerr is now committing to Jordan Poole for 25 to 30 minutes next season. Right. And without Klay to start the season, maybe more than that. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if Jordan Poole's starting opening night. But, you know, in general, you know, ceiling wise and where this seems to be going with Book Knight, like I think he's definitely, you know, in the mix. And I would say almost the opposite of that is the guy I'll move to next, but he's the one, you know, that's other people seem to be mocking. And I know Davion Mitchell is they're having conversations about him. He, like Book Knight, is definitely in the mix. A lot of these guys are. Mm-hmm. Mitchell is the guy.
For what it's worth, those are the two guys like in this tier of guys. So remove Scotty Barnes, remove Kuminga. Those two guys are the names I've heard most for Golden State, as well as I would say Josh Giddey is another one that comes up quite a bit. But I think that's more speculative.
Yeah. I think that, you know, when we talk about organizational tug of war, and we talk about the priority for next season compared to the priority for a bridge to the future, Mitchell's the next season pick. You know, you don't love that he measured 6'1" at the combine, but at the same time, you watch him guarding Cade Cunningham during the season. And I mean, I don't know where you're at on him, but I do think he's going to be able to guard. I think his defense will hold up in the league. I think right away, I think you could play him next to Steph in certain lineups and feel okay, especially if you got Wiggins out there, Draymond, you know, you have people behind him. He's going to be tenacious on the ball. I mean, I don't know. I'll ask you if you believe in the three-point shot. He went from 29% at Auburn as a freshman, does the transfer, then goes 32. Then this past season, it's near 45% from three, 165 assists last season, only 73 turnovers. He, more than I think any of these guys, would help the Warriors' rotation next season. But at the same time, do you draft the seventh pick with only the idea of who will help the rotation at best next season? Probably not.
Yeah. I don't think you do that, but I also think that people are underestimating the upside of Davion Mitchell just due to his age. This is a guy that any person you have ever spoken with around the Baylor program, anyone that has ever worked out with him, anyone that's ever trained with him, just discusses at length how this guy is not just a good worker, but is one of the best workers they've ever been around, point blank, period. And has just this unbelievable competitive mindset about getting better and about helping his team win. And those are the guys that kind of exceed, you know, whatever the typical growth curve is for, you know, based off of age, right? You know, everyone expects these 19-year-olds to keep getting better. Well, if you're not going to work at it, you're not going to get better, right? In a case like Davion Mitchell, like Davion's going to keep working until he's 30. And it wouldn't surprise me if we keep seeing him take these drastic improvements. Guys, you know, in the league, like Jordan Poole, for instance, like guys in the league are not who they are when they enter the league at 21. They get better at 22 and 23 and 24. And in the case of Davion's entering the league at an exceedingly high level. He is an excellent, excellent point of attack defender. I'm a little bit worried about the physical nature of how he defends a little bit at his size. Definitely a guy that I think fans are going to be in for a bit of an awakening, because, you know, people hate Marcus Smart because of like the flopping shit.
He takes so many, Mitchell takes so many on-ball charges. I don't think I've ever seen a player take as many, just like guarding a guy straight in isolation situation, and he's taking a charge.
Just puts the chest out and flies backwards. Like it's a skill at this point. I believe in the shot off of the catch or off of a one dribble relocation. I think that those are the two places where he succeeded most. Like if you look at the off the bounce numbers on Synergy or something like that, they're ridiculous. Like I think he's like in the 90th percentile, but a lot of those shots come off of relocations where a guy closes out super heavy and he has to just like take a 1 pound dribble to his right and then just set and shoot again. Or they're coming around ball screens where someone just went way under on him and he gets a ton of time to set into the shot. Right. Having said that, like NBA teams are going to have to go. I mean, there aren't a lot of bigs that are going to be able to deal with him in a drop because of how fast he is. Like he is going to turn the corner on bigs. He is very, very fast. And he really only needs like one counter. Like right now, his goal is he wants to get downhill as fast as he can. And he is fast as hell once he does it.
Well, it's burst.
If he develops that one move. Yeah, if he develops that one move, it's going to be hard to stay in front.
Yeah, it's that burst athleticism where it isn't just like, hey, if you just got them out on a track and said, you know, run a mile, you know, he's faster. It's like he's just at 0 miles an hour and he's at, you know, 9, 60. Like that. Yeah,
yeah,
whatever. Yeah. And that translates. That's why, I mean, if people haven't watched him much and if you're doubting what he'll be defensively, like turn on some of the defensive tape. I mean, it is like, you know, like linebackers that can just go side to side on a field. Like he just kind of has that lateral quickness where, you know, watch him guard Cade Cunningham in games. We're talking about a 6'8", you know, wing who he would theoretically be matched on it. It's points in his NBA career, and you know he stays with him. He's got quick hands. I do think the charge is that, you know, as much as it will annoy fans, I do think that's such a good tool for an under, you know, a Beverly type defender. Kyle Lowry. Yeah. I mean, it's what I mean, like the ceiling, like if you are drafting him at 7, you're going like Kyle Lowry, like that's what you just want him to become. You worry,
that's the name I've said a lot of, is Kyle Lowry.
And if you're a big time doubter, you're like, it's Javon Carter essentially, you know, like a great big 12 like veteran defender that gets to the league, the offense isn't there, he can be kind of a pest defensively, but he's just doesn't have upside. I mean, to me, that, you know, we talk about how much Steph Curry and Draymond Green are involved in conversations this summer, and I think, you know, their preference would be just probably more veteran, but if you were pitching a draft pick to them, a draft pick that can step right in, I can imagine like Davion Mitchell meet Draymond Green, you know, tonight he's going to play in the closing lineup. How do you like him as your point of attack defender? Okay. You know, yeah, we might That's not great. Have got the veteran we liked, but you know, I like the way he's harassing the ball handler right now.
Yeah. I think Dre would be fine with that. I think that Steph and Dre are like, hey, can we get Damian Lillard? Like that'd be great. Can we do all this? That'd be fine. You know, we got 714 and Wiseman. Can we do that?
Like, no doubt. But yeah, just as we're talking about, you know, picks at 7, like to me, that's the one that I think would probably help most next season, but I'm not sure.
I agree with you. I'm right.
Okay. Let's talk wing. Cause like, as I said, those two that, I think me and you both believe right now from talking to people behind the scenes are most in the mix. And there's a lot of time for that to change. The Warriors I know are planning to have a bunch of workouts either at the facility or to go travel out in like the mid July range. And as you know, a lot of stuff shifts in that range, but right now those two, but they're guards. And I do think, you know, all things being considered, if the Warriors could just pick a prospect position, wing is where I think they need the most help. So, you know, I have like 6 different wings down here, names, but you know what's, you know, what the other names that could be up at 7. Who's the wing that you think, if the Warriors went wing, makes the most sense at 7?
So look, like Josh Giddey played point guard this year in Adelaide, but he's 6'8", and I don't think he's athletic enough to play point at the NBA level. I think he's going to be more of like a you know, people get mad when I say this because they think Giddey is more of a point guard, but I do think there's a lot of Joe Ingles, you know, type of super high level feel, 6'8", makes the right decision constantly. When I talk to people around the league, there's been a thought, let's say, and this doesn't come from anyone that is like, oh yeah, like the Warriors really like Giddey. It's phrased more as like, I bet you the Warriors really like Giddey. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like them being like, oh yeah, like
Bob Myers called me yesterday to tell me he just watched some Josh Giddey tape.
Right. It's more just like a, you know what? Like, he fits all of the traits that they look for. Super high level in terms of processing the game. Very high basketball IQ, makes decisions very quickly, very high level ball movement passer, 6'8", so has positional size to play the 1 through 3, just kind of does a lot of different things that they look for.
I have watched some on him, but like, to be honest, I haven't dove into him enough. Where in his growth do you think he is? Like, do you think he year one comes in and could play 14 bench minutes and help, or is he like, hey, he could be really good in 3 seasons, but you're gonna have to wait?
It depends on how he translates in terms of dealing with the physicality of the NBA early. Didn't have any problems with that this year in the NBL as an 18-year-old. Like, this is a kid that was, he's probably 6'7", 170 pounds, like 18 months ago. And he's now like 6'8", you know, probably pretty close to 200 now. So he's put on a lot of weight and a lot of strength over that time. Because again, like another kid that you talk to people around, you know, Australia basketball, Adelaide, everything, you know, really high level character kid, exceptional worker, all of those traits just like in flying colors. So he's been able to really put on weight as quickly as he's, you know, needed to. But, you know, and he's not going to shy away from it. I mean, like, he's, you know, typical Australian kid that is not afraid of that shit. So it's more, he is still skinny and it's going to take time in terms of just the physical adjustment, given that he's not like a crazy athlete. Having said that, like, his feel for the game is just so high. Like, if you just needed him to take up a spot on the court and to make high level decisions for others on the court, I think there's a reasonable chance he could be okay at that, as long as the shot translates early. And I know that that's like the number one thing that he's working on kind of in the gym right now.
So let's say the Warriors just decide they need shooting. They need to prioritize shooting. And like, to be honest, that's probably more of a question at 14. And we'll get down to like, sure, Duarte and Kispert if they say project at 7, rotation player at 14. But what about, I'm just going to name 4 wings here. Moses Moody, who that was kind of who I was going to with the shooting. Keon Johnson, who's pure athleticism. Zaire Williams, who's a pretty local product, at least, you know, out of Stanford, that, you know, we talk about project with upside. And then Jalen Johnson, who you had very low, I thought, on your board.
I do.
I feel like he's got such a fluctuating range.
Yeah.
Who of those 4 do you think makes the most sense?
Probably Moody. It doesn't hurt that Moody is the highest guy among those guys for me on my board, just because, you know, the combination of 3-point shooting, he shot 39% on high volume this season, you know, just a very good shooter at the end of the day, and I don't doubt that he's gonna shoot at the NBA level.
How about defend? He seems like he's versatile, but I don't know, when I watch him, I'm like, I do see like the 3-and-D traits, but also, like, I don't know, he kind of moves slower than I would like.
Oh yeah, slow twitch athlete for sure. And that's I think why the people who do things publicly like me, I think, do tend to be a little bit higher on Moses than what the league is. Because in general, the league does tend to be a little bit higher on physical traits. And frankly, I do too. I do think physical traits matter to an exceptional degree in the NBA, but someone like Moody is a guy that definitely a slower twitch athlete, doesn't have a great first step, but I think, you know, isn't like a crazy vertical athlete either. I think he has good lateral quickness when sliding his feet defensively, and he really gives a shit on that end. Like, he is strong. He has good feet. He has a 7'1" wingspan. I think he's going to be pretty switchable in the NBA as well. Definitely doesn't have as much star power as like a James Bouknight, or frankly, like if a Zaire Williams hits, like Zaire Williams is going to be awesome in the NBA. It's just whether or not he can put on 25 pounds and add the contact balance that he needs to not fall over 7 times a game. Right. Like, I'm skeptical of that just given the frame. I think it's pretty slight and skinny.
Another Santa Cruz star next season, if you guys are.
Yeah, like Zaire Williams would no question be in Santa Cruz next year. You can't play him on an NBA court next year, I don't think. And I feel that way about Jalen Johnson. I feel that way about, frankly, Keon Johnson might work his way in because he's such a high-level defender, and Steve Kerr would be like, you know what, we'll play 4-on-5 on offense just to get his defense on the court for 15 minutes a night. And Keon has some ball skills and can dribble and stuff like that, but really can't shoot at all right now. Jalen Johnson, I don't think can shoot. Zaire Williams,
to be determined,
sort of can shoot. much more comfortable off of the pull up than off of a catch and shoot right now. You know, likes to self create and get to that step back. He's one of the few guys in this draft class that can step back both to his right and to his left. He can hit that like sidestep to his right, or that, you know, ball pickup, step back, you know, knock down the shot to his left. Moody is just going to catch and shoot and have no worries translating from day one in the NBA, I don't think.
Yeah. I think, you know, we talk about Davion Mitchell being like the safe guard pick at center at 7. I think Moody's kind of like the safe wing pick at 7, where, you know, six seasons from now, he's probably not the best NBA player, but I think we know he won't be he's not going to be the one that flames out of the league.
It's like this. He's like Sadiq Bey last year. Very similar.
Yeah. So what's interesting about the Warriors having 7 and 14 is you look at this just massive group of guys and you're like, that guy feels like a stretch at 7, but it feels like a steal at 14, right? It almost feels like every guy's like, man, if that guy's available to them at 14, if Davion Mitchell falls to 14, boom. You know, but at 7, I don't know. And, you know, I keep going down the list. So as we kind of move towards guys who I think might make even more sense to them at 14, I do want to mention, though, the bigs. You know, Kai Jones, who you were talking about earlier when we mentioned Texas, and Sengun, who's, you know, he's MVP of the Turkish League, which, you know, I know everybody says is kind of like the second best European league. That to me only makes sense if Wiseman's moved, but what's weird is if Wiseman's moved, the pick to take that guy might also be moved with him. So I don't see them taking a big unless there's a complete roster rearrangement. But if they do, do you think those guys fit?
Yeah. And I think that it's important to try and like look out on the marketplace and see like what's out there, right? Like what player is actually worth James Wiseman at this point for Golden State. Like that's kind of what I'm struggling with all of the trade stuff. Right. And I think that's kind of what you alluded to earlier, saying like, they're not like desperate to get off of this pick, right? They do it if they found the right move. And what I'm struggling with is finding the right move, right? Like Miles Turner is the guy that makes like the most sense in the world to me. But I mean, Miles Turner, if they're moving Miles Turner, they're moving him because they want to build around Domantas Sabonis at center. They're not going to like, you know, be like, hey, let's go take James Wiseman and have the same problem that we've had now for 3 years where Turner and Sabonis are combined together. Right. Looking on the perimeter and on the wings, like I just don't see, who the guy is that's available right now. So I'm kind of going in assuming that unless something crazy happens
I think they're going to end up picking at 7 and 14. I really do. And then I think,
yeah,
I think that the veteran help that they've continued to talk about, I think that comes mid-level. I think that comes minimums. I think, I mean, you watch the playoffs right now, and Reggie Jackson and Nicholas Batum just were major factors in the Clippers going deep. And they got a hit there. You know, I could see them making another chase at Batum. They thought they were close at Batum. And that's, I think, going to end up being disappointing to the Warriors fan base. But I don't see them, you know, Siakam is a name that obviously in league circles has been talked about. John Hollinger put it out the other day. But if the price for Siakam is, I mean, Wiggins' contract, which at this point still I think is considered negative value, Wiggins is still positive value to the Warriors on the court. So the upgrade of Wiggins to Siakam, is that enough to give up Wiseman, who you picked second overall like 8 months ago, the seventh pick, 14th pick also? Like, Toronto probably would want a haul for it. And like, I just know that the Warriors aren't going to just give up the massive haul. Now, if they, you know, we'll see.
I love John. You know, I'm sure that he heard that. Like, I'm like that. I guarantee, like, I haven't heard the Siakam stuff, but like, I guarantee you that like, John's not just putting that out there, you know? I just don't know why Toronto would do that at the end of the day, unless they're getting just like such a ridiculous steal that they're not, that it's not sensible for anyone, right?
Well, the weird thing with Siakam is, you know, it didn't have a good season last season. Has a torn labrum, I believe, that he's, you know, not going to be back till November on. And, you know, there was some weird stuff with him and Nick Nurse last season. He got suspended a game for like, you know, something with Nick Nurse. So, I mean, you wonder, I don't have all the internal data on, you know, necessary information on what's going on there. But, you know, I think that's maybe why his name is being floated out there. Toronto has this kind of reboot that they're maybe looking at this summer with them having the fourth pick. And I do think a lot of just the Warriors chatter, understandably, is just looking at their situation where assets that teams in their situation don't usually have, which is the second overall pick that just went in the draft, 7-14, while also, you know, being mildly publicly pressured by, you know, Draymond and Steph on a closing window. So I do think that there's the league almost circling around going like, we can make them, like, there might be a chance to make them just make a desperate overpay.
Right.
And that's what I just don't, I could see them making a move, but I just don't see them making an overpay.
Right, but like, so like, who are the popular names right now? Like CJ McCollum. I don't know that you're gonna pair CJ with Clay and Steph. Like, it would be good. Like, they'd be incredible offensively, but I don't know that you move Wiggins for CJ, because I like, frankly, like, Andrew was really good last year and really good in the ways that the Warriors need, to where I wonder if he would be more effective just straight up for Golden State next year than CJ.
Yeah, and that sounds like, you know, blasphemous to say, but it's like they need a three that guards big wings. And they don't, you know, do they need some of the stuff that CJ McCollum does? Sure, but their hope is like Jordan Poole does, like a poor man's version of that. You know, he emerges into that type of player, and because they know Jordan Poole's not going to suddenly go, all right, fine, I'll upsize and be the guy that guards LeBron in a play-in game, essentially, like Andrew Wiggins did. And
Then there's like Ben Simmons, right? And, you know, maybe there's like a three-team deal out there.
That's the thing. But that's the one thing I could see making a move happen, is some type of three-team deal. Because, you know, a lot of, you know, you're talking about McCollum. Well, if Portland's trading McCollum because they're trying to win now with Lillard, they're not doing it for the seventh pick and Wiseman, because they're not winning next season with that. You know, Philadelphia is not trading Ben Simmons straight up to the Warriors for that package, because then they're bringing in Joel Embiid's backup and a rookie to win next season. Right. No, that doesn't make sense. So yes, three, it would almost have to be three teamy, but I'm just not seeing, a month out from the draft, we'll see. Front offices are creative. Gerald Morey certainly is creative. I'm not seeing, you know, trade fits.
Right. No. And I'm totally with that. Like, if you're Portland too, and you're moving, cause what we just mentioned, the two most likely names, it's CJ and it's Ben Simmons, right? Like, those are the names that everyone, you know, in the league is talking about. You know, if you're those two teams, why wouldn't you just do a deal together as opposed to involving Golden State? Like, Ben Simmons would be an incredible outlet valve for Damian Lillard when he gets blitzed on these ball screens all the time, right? So like, it's hard for me right now given the way that the league is laid out. It's hard for me right now to see who the guy is. I will say, like, I'm assuming that Atlanta is just going to max John Collins. But John Collins is a free agent. Like, maybe that could be something where you feel like you can play Wiseman, Draymond, and Collins together, something weird like that. Like, if you wanted to do like seven and a future first for like Collins to get Atlanta not to match the deal. Like, I don't. This is just the other like thing me that's looming shit over at the wall, though.
Yeah, and the other thing that's looming over it, it's like Joe Lacob is pretty transparently messaging out there. He's not going to go berserk with the tax money. You know, they're already right. They just paid a record. They're on pace to continue to pay a record. Like, they're not just going to try to like maneuver away where it's like, you know, they add another massive chunk salary and go whatever. You know, they're paying $200 million tax bill to the league. It seems to me that unless a home run situation or a can't miss opportunity presents itself, their preference is have three guys on rookie deals moving forward, hope to grow them, hope Clay comes back healthy, and that just seems, we'll see. That seems like the most likely scenario. I want to get back to draft prospects with you though.
Yeah, but that gets to bigs, right? Like, it seems difficult to trade James Wiseman, so it seems difficult to draft a big in this year's draft, basically.
Yeah. I didn't mention, and I should have. I actually had him in our original mock after draft night when they got the 7th pick, Franz Wagner. He's got a brother in the league who's kind of like a stiffer center that shoots it a bit, and it's kind of been a disappointing prospect. That's not who he is, though. You know, his upside's defensively, it seems like, you know, switchable, gets out on guards, moves laterally, and can't, you know, the shot is reasonable. I do think that's the swing for him in the league. You know, can he be near 40% on spot ups, or is he, you know, near 30? And then to me, that very much changes who he becomes. What do you think about him? He seems like a stretch at 7, seems like a steal at 14.
Yeah, he's a guy that took me a little bit of time to come around on, I would say. In large part because of the offensive game. Like, he is a ball mover who processes the game very quickly and can fit within what Golden State wants to do for sure, but also streaky shooter and not like a super high level ball handler that you're going to be like, hey, let's run secondary ball screens, you know, side pick and rolls for right now either. The thing that is important with remembering with Franz is that he is, I believe, 3 or 2 months younger than Jalen Suggs. Like, freshman age, very, very young kid, came over to Michigan early. So definitely still developing in terms of what his skill set is and still developing in terms of, you know, where he is as a player. But you hit the nail on the head. Defensively, he's very good. You know, makes every single read, makes aggressive and high level off ball rotations to get deflections. You know, he's an awesome weak side defender. And then on top of it, like, he's pretty good at dealing with guys on the ball. Like, Michigan would throw him against some guards on the ball, and it was pretty impressive seeing him slide with them. So, like, I like him. I can see that Golden State would really like him as well. Like, if he fell to 14, I do think he's the kind of guy that makes a lot of sense for them, but I don't know that it's like the sexiest pick in the world
at either. 7, like, too. That's just,
yeah. Feels like the name that I've talked about a lot is Robert Covington with him. Like, I think that there are a lot of similar traits in terms of streaky shooter, very high level, weak side defender, good on the ball, but not great on the ball, to where like you're going to feel comfortable with him against the fastest ones in the NBA. Yeah. Like, honestly, like, Robert Covington's probably worth a lottery pick. So yeah, like, take him at 14, but 7, I don't know.
Yeah. So as we talk about the 14th pick, I do think if they end up using both these picks, it makes sense to, if you're pairing one project or whatever you want, like a RAR prospect that you think has a big upside, it makes sense to use the other on somebody you do think can help now. And obviously, you know, the better theoretical use would be go for the home run at 7 and then the safer pick at 14. That's it. And to me, that's why I do see a guy like, if Corey Kispert's there at 14, you know, he'll probably get, you know, railroaded in the playoffs by, you know, if he's in the West Finals next season and he's on the court for 15 minutes, the opposing coach is going to go like pick and roll, get him on a switch, you know, go at him, LeBron, go at him, Kawhi, whoever. But at the same time, I mean, you watch his deep range, his consistent range on the move, just like the pure release on the shot, and his off ball movement. I mean, the guy's overplaying him. He's back cutting, you know, it's stuff like that. And you're like, man, in the Warriors offense next season, I could see him averaging 13 bench points, you know, as a rookie in Steve Kerr's offense, essentially. And it's like, that's helpful as you're trying to get a good seed, as you're trying to win a first round game. You know, maybe he comes out and has 4 for 4 from three in the second quarter. Like that at 14 is interesting to me. And then I think you could make a similar argument with Chris Duarte. He's probably more versatile, can do a little bit more defensively, is not clearly not as good as just a pure knockdown shooter. What do you think of those two, and which one would be more ready to just step right in and like help the Warriors win next season?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm higher on Chris Duarte than I think anyone. Like, honestly, I'm higher on him than anyone I've talked to with a team, even. Like I have him at 12 on my board right now. That's probably where he's going to end up, like to end the process. I have not talked to anyone else that has him, you know, above like 14 or so. The reason I like him is exactly what you said, just an incredible defender who can also knock down 40% of his threes and can do so off of movement. The thing that I think will frustrate Steve Kerr a little bit is sees passes. Like it's not that he doesn't have, it's not that he has bad vision. He doesn't have great vision, but it's not like, it's not awesome. It's just like average, I would say, for a combo guard. He's a really off target passer right now that can kind of lead to like record scratchy moments within the flow of the offense. That's his like one main weakness that I think will frustrate what Kerr would want. And the reason that, like, if there's a single reason that he would, you know, struggle to get off the bench, like I would think it could be that, but I do see him as an impact player from day one in the NBA, starting quality long term, really
like,
good player.
Like if Chris Duarte at age 24, he's like older than Brandon Ingram. I saw somebody say, if he steps into free agency this summer, I mean, like a team might just be like, here's $8 million a year. Come be a rotation wing. Cause we think you can come do that with not necessarily the upside to become a max type guy, but at 14, that's okay. You know, if you use the 14th pick technically on a rotation wing, well, you know, you could argue the Warriors would have, if they could trade the 14th pick for a rotation wing, that they would. So, I did want to ask you though, cause you know, in your initial mock draft, you know, you have Bouknight going at 7, and that to me is like higher upside offensive player that maybe you go with like a more defensive type prospect at 14. And you did Usman Garuba. what do you like about him? 18, you know, Real Madrid. Again, I haven't watched a ton, but I do know that the belief is upside is kind of switchable defense.
Yeah, to me, just very clearly the best defender in the draft right now. Not to say that he has more upside defensively than Evan Mobley, just because Evan Mobley's tools, like if it comes together, he's going to be like defensive player of the year potentially. But, you know, Usman Garuba is pretty maxed out physically. It looks like, you know, hasn't really grown for, you know, 3 years now at this point, 6'8", you know, 220, 230 pounds, 7'2" wingspan. But man, I mean, flies across the court, can switch everywhere, really good scramble defender, has that innate sense that like would really connect with Draymond defensively, just in terms of like knowing where to be at all times.
Like I think he's a little JTA, like, I mean, with obviously like
a little
you,
bit,
you would want that to become more, but
yeah, I will say this, like Garuba is the best teenager I've ever evaluated at playing the gap in the pick and roll. Especially given that like he's playing literal like Euro League level starter minutes, and some of those guards over there are absolute fucking geniuses, and they are, you know, some of the absolute smartest players you will see in terms of getting bigs thrown off in terms of what their, you know, reads are in pick and roll and where they're supposed to be, getting caught in no man's land in that middle gap area. He plays cat and mouse exceptionally well with guards and bigs in pick and roll. To the point where it's just kind of unbelievable watching it, like for a teenager. Staggering prospect defensively on that end for a teenager. Look, like he might not get any better, but he's so good right now that he would be a plus defender in the NBA. Like I genuinely believe that.
Yeah. Do you think long term he's like kind of a 4-5 in the offense would be my two questions with him.
Yeah, so like what does he do? Not a bad short roll passer, you know, not like, you know, expert level Draymond or anything long term, I don't think, but can do some of that. Developing as a corner 3-point shooter, does take shots off the hop, like can, you know, at least set into them, not off of a lot of movement, but off of, you know, like he might be like sauntering around a, you know, screen and relocating to a corner and finds a kick out pass and takes it off the hop and shoots. Right. Like he's not flying off of ball screens and, you know, shooting like Corey Kispert is. Right. But the hope is that he can be like a 37% 3-point shooter from the corners who can also like come up and screen and roll and short roll pass, because he's also not like a wild vertical athlete to finish like drastically above the rim and like tear down the rim. Right.
Yeah. Before I get you out of here, is there anybody I haven't mentioned that you feel like is stealth target potential in 14 might rise, whatever?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked much about Jalen Johnson, like, you know, very high level, 6'9", 7-foot wingspan, great out in transition, can make passing reads at a really high level. There are some evaluators who think he can be a very high level switch defender. I'm not one of them personally, just given the lack of care that he showed on that end this year at Duke. I thought he was really poor on that end. Not a guy for me, you know what I mean? So like, it's hard for me to, like, I can tell you what other people see, but just not there for me.
Yeah. It wouldn't be an absolute stunner if he goes off the board in the teens, essentially.
No, honestly, like he could go 9 and I wouldn't be blown away, but you know, just not.
Seems like a Kings pick.
Yeah. Right. Like, but by the way, like that's, I think the team that wants to move their pick most right now is the Kings. So like, we'll see where that goes at the end of the day. I will note Trey Murphy is like someone way kind of off the board. I have him at 20. I am a big fan of Trey Murphy. 6'9", very bouncy athlete. You know, one of those guys that had a very late growth spurt. Like when he was a freshman in high school, I think going in, he was like 5'9" and then he was like 6'3" up until like his junior year of high school, and then bounced up to like 6'8" basically. So retains some of that fluidity just from growing up as a guard, retains some of the footwork, just having to fly off of screens and shoot. Right. From such a young age and having that muscle memory of just knowing how to do it. But now it's 6'9" and, you know, can knock down threes at a 42% clip off the catch pretty easily. Plus he's got real defensive lateral quickness, like at an exceedingly high level. Trey Murphy is a guy that, you know, might end up like 15, 16 on my board, and it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, Sam, anything you want to plug before I get you out of here?
No, you know, I'm just going to be, you know, plugging away on the draft guide. That'll be out at some point. You know, listen to my podcast as well, Game Theory Podcast. Thanks for having me on, Slater.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. And yeah, it's an interesting month ahead for the Warriors. Pretty monumental from a roster building standpoint. So good to have you on to talk about it.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.